Ladies and gentlemen, imagine a time when there were no screens in our pockets or in our living rooms, when the idea of transmitting images through thin air seemed just as plausible as a trip to Mars. That was until Philo Farnsworth came along. Philo was not a man of means or a product of a prestigious college or university. He was a farm boy from Utah, a young man who didn't even have electricity in his house until he was 14. Yet, he was captivated by the world of science and the magic of unseen waves. One day, while plowing his family's potato field, the back-and-forth furrows sparked an idea in him. He imagined a system of scanning images line by line the same way that a plow worked in the field. This was the birth of the concept of electronic television, an idea that was far beyond the realm of the ordinary, even unthinkable for most. By his early 20s, and after years of tinkering and with the support of a few private investors, Philo turned that vision into a reality. He created the first working prototype of an all-electronic television system. His invention wasn't born out of a sophisticated lab, but a simple lab in San Francisco. And yet, it was this unassuming laboratory that saw the first transmission of television images with a resolution of 60 horizontal lines in 1927, a feat that seemed impossible just a few years before. Meanwhile, corporate giant RCA was racing toward the same goal with an army of engineers. They had resources, they had manpower, and they had influence. Yet, they were stuck in bureaucracy, and they were arguing over the right way to proceed, and in fact, they chose to focus on the mechanical realm while Philo had already embraced the electronic. They were trying to climb the mountain while Philo had already planted his flag at the summit. Philo Farnsworth's journey, as you can imagine, wasn't without obstacles. In fact, the giants of the industry, like RCA, engaged him in a fierce legal battle over the patent. But after years of struggle, RCA had to finally acknowledge that Philo was right. He was there first, and they paid to use his technology. Philo Farnsworth's story is a testament to the power of individual innovation. I mean, here was a man whose vision, determination, and tenacity outpaced a corporate giant. He changed the world from a small lab in San Francisco, and his legacy lives on in every television screen worldwide. But what does that mean for those of us who have to do our work in teams? Are we inherently at a disadvantage? I mean, what if Philo Farnsworth didn't succeed in spite of being a one-person show, but because of it? Is there a way that teams can learn to function as more nimble, innovative units and get things done together? That's what we're going to explore today. This is Daily Creative, a podcast for creative pros who want to be brave, focused, and brilliant every day. My name is Todd Henry. Welcome to the show.
This has been a gap that has not been filled for 40 years since I started doing this work, because you know, my initial focus and the initial book, Getting Things Done, was focused on individual productivity, individual best practices. But once people get this, then they go back into an environment that sucks. And then they have to, you know, they all go, God, why can't everybody around me get this?
That's David Allen, author of the international best-selling book, Getting Things Done, and the new book, Team, which is about how to get things done together. What he's describing is a pretty universal phenomenon, which is we all think that we have our stuff together, but why can't everybody around me get their stuff together too? There are several core practices that David argues in the book Team that we need to do effectively together in order to ensure that we don't get stuck in the mud. The first is to capture, which is really about,
okay, guys, what has our attention as a team? Because what has your attention are things that are not on cruise control. There are a lot of things a team doesn't have attention on because it's working, it's smooth, whatever. But whatever the team has its attention on, and that might be an opportunity or a challenge, you know, that had just come up or some surprise that they're going to have to deal with, whatever it is, there's nothing wrong with not having that on cruise control. It's just information. And so what do you need to do to get what has your attention off the team's mind? Because on your mind is usually inversely relationship to getting it done. So whatever's got the team's attention is probably hung up for different reasons. There are decisions about things that haven't been made, or the results haven't been parked somewhere.
David argues that when we don't know what's on the team's collective mind, what's capturing our collective attention, it can cause us to be distracted, to waste our efforts solving problems that aren't even really problems, they just happen to be things that we're worried about. When we have a place to capture team thoughts, ideas, tasks, concerns, it can help us all come together around what's really important as opposed to just assuming what's important to the collective mind of the team. But once we capture, we have to move on to the second phase.
Which is clarify. We wrote it down. What does that mean? Is that something that's a someday maybe? Is that something we need to move on? Is that something that's just reference? Is that something just a crazy idea? You know, what is it? I don't know if you're familiar with Holacracy, which we've been practicing for 10 years. They use the term tension, which to me just translates to attention. In the Holacracy practice, that is designed to be that whoever notices something that ought to be brought to the attention of the organization for some reason, whether it's an opportunity or a challenge or whatever, it's structured so that there's freedom and safety to bring that up and not make you wrong or make the situation wrong, but say, okay, now how do we resolve this at as low a level as possible, as quickly as possible?
But capturing and clarifying isn't enough. I mean, imagine you had a giant whiteboard full of really clear things that are on the team's mind. At some point, you have to actually organize those into actionable steps, or as David calls them, next actions.
You have to organize anything that you need to be reminded of in some way. And that could be reference material where we need to organize, where are we going to park this information that so that the right people can get to it when they need it? Or where are we going to park reminders of things that need to be done, who's doing them, and other things like that. So it's the same as the basic getting things done methodology, which is, okay, if you can't finish something in the moment you think of it, but it's something that you still need to do something about or decide something about, where are you going to park that? And, you know, same thing with teams, like for individuals, you just need lists. You know, you could have a Kanban board where you just got Post-it stuck up there with all that stuff. Or you could be using, you know, the groupware kind of things, whether that's, you know, Microsoft 365, you know, where you're parking stuff in, you know, OneNote or in Teams or whatever. So, or Asana or any of those kinds of things that are designed to be sort of groupware think or group capture of reminders, et cetera. And also now one of the biggest issues is channel creep. How many channels are you getting stuff in? You know, you need to, you know, there's Team and Slack and there's Asana and there, it, you know, there's now, technology has just added volume and speed to the stuff you got to deal with. How does the team decide its protocols and standards about how do they respond to those things? How do you respond to a Slack note? How do you respond to, well, any input that you get? So again, this is where you have to have an interplay of both personal productivity best practices as well as team productivity best practices.
And this is where things get really difficult, right? Because you may have your stuff together, but if the person you're working with on the project doesn't have their stuff together, it's going to create a bottleneck in the entire process, which can be frustrating for those uber super productive types who always have everything organized and they know exactly what they're doing next, to have to work with someone who's basically winging it. They're feeling their way through the process. In reality, the people who are kind of feeling their way through the process probably aren't engaging in the next step that David recommends, which is to reflect.
Okay, let's assess where we are, what's happened, what's new, what's changed, what do we need to handle or manage? And that reflection process could be everything from daily stand-up meetings that you need to have all the way to annual strategic planning. So the reflection process is, when do we step back and pull up the rear guard and get current? What do we need to do to get the world off our mind right now as a team? And that doesn't happen automatically by itself. You actually have to, you know, it's a strange behavior, but it's called think.
The final stage is to actually begin to move on the things that you've captured and organized and reflected on.
Well, if you do the first four things, if you've captured, clarified, and organized and reflected on the whole thing, then your engagement says, where do I put my attention and my activity right now? And then how do you choose what to do? Because you can only do one thing at a time, at least consciously. And so making a good choice. So that's where the engage thing comes in. Okay, how do we engage right now? As opposed to just driven by latest and loudest and hope, you're actually making good, confident choices. They may be wrong choices. They may need to course correct, but at least you're confident, you know, learn from your mistake. And so that's the engage process, where if you've done all the other stuff, if you don't capture, if you don't clarify, if you don't organize, if you don't reflect, your engagement is just driven by latest and loudest.
David Allen's new book, Team, is available now wherever books are sold. And if you want to hear the full interview with David or any of my past interviews with David, you can do so in the Daily Creative app at dailycreative.app. When we come back in a minute, I'm going to share with you one of my personal organizational secrets to ensuring that you're focusing your creative energy on the right things. We'll be back right after a break. Hi, everyone. This is Todd Henry. My new book, The Brave Habit, is available now wherever books are sold, in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. I think it's my favorite book I've ever written, and a lot of people are telling me it's their favorite book as well. I think you're going to like it. So check it out wherever books are sold or at thebravehabit.com. Now, on with the show. Many of the struggles that teams have stem from one fundamental misunderstanding. Your mind is not wired to do projects. It's wired to solve problems. But how is most of our work organized? It's organized in the form of projects, tasks, and nested lists of stuff we have to get done by Friday or else we're going to lose our job. But how do you know that you're doing the right things, especially when you're doing creative work? If you're doing a project, you may not be doing the right things at all. This is because project work leaves its purpose up to interpretation by whoever's doing the work. After all, the job is just to get the project done. If you and I are working on a project together, for example, build website X, you might have a completely different understanding of why we're doing that work than I do. You may think that we're solving an entirely different problem with the website than the one that I think we're solving, which means we might take very different approaches and thus make very different creative decisions, even though both decisions technically complete the project successfully. Projects are really just collections of problems to be solved. So, if instead of defining your work in chunks called projects, you instead define it as problems to be solved, you and your teammates will be much better aligned. It's easier to stay on the same page when you ask, did we solve the problem, rather than did we finish the project? In my book, The Accidental Creative, I recommend that you break every project on your plate down into its constituent problems to be solved. Then discuss those problems as a team and ensure that you're actually solving the same problems. By doing this, you ensure that you're putting your focus where it belongs, on generating creative solutions to difficult problems rather than simply cranking through projects to get to the other side. Over the next couple of episodes, we're going to explore this question of whether teams or individuals get more done. You can have the right system in place, but still fail. Teams fail all the time, and it's not because of a lack of a productivity system. It's because they don't account for personality. On next week's episode, we look at how to intercept those personality breakdowns just in the nick of time. If you'd like to hear the full interview with David Allen or any of our guests, you can do so in the Daily Creative app at dailycreative.app. There, you'll also receive daily coaching, tools to help you be brave, focused, and brilliant every single day. You can learn more at dailycreative.app. My name is Todd Henry, and you can find my books, my speaking, and more at toddhenry.com. Daily Creative is produced by Joshua Gott. My name is Todd Henry. Thanks so much for listening.